Carpaccio.
Sal!
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 Carpaccio.
On WGR.
Happy Wednesday. Sal Carpaccio joining us here on the Western Hotline as we continue to react to the Bills draft and, you know, dig through the picks, storylines, and all the other spicy stuff that came with it. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Wednesday. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We made the made a lot of the shouty shows. We're considering renaming the show to Jerry and Joe because that's what they called it a bunch of times.
I heard that. That was pretty funny. Yeah. When you all three of us were texting yesterday when you wrote that, Joe. I felt really bad, but I was laughing too. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it.
What's more amazing, that the mistake was made or that it was made 12 more times and nobody ever corrected? Nobody, like no producer in their ear went that that wasn't the name of the show. Unless they were the ones that made the mistake. Maybe that's actually what happened.
Who knows?
Well, I think what happened was Nick Wright said it first, so everybody kind of just assumed that was the name of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I would guess then they just kept going off it. I think that's it. You know, and how about Nick Wright, our guy, right? Jeremy, our Syracuse guy, right? And, you know, I mean, he put some respect on the Syracuse guys here. Jeremy, right? We should have done that.
Well, the funny thing is, someone texted me, hey, Nick Wright stuck up for you. I'm like, that's not what I need from Bills.
He stuck up for Jerry.
Yeah, for Bills fans. They're like, uh-oh, Nick Wright stuck up for me? Yeah.
That is not.
Uh-oh.
It's not the ally you might not be right now, in your corner right now.
Not right now, please. No, but it's fine.
You know,
anyway.
You know, it's funny when you use the word stick up. I'm glad you did, because I was actually thinking a lot. You know, we've all been thinking a lot about this the last couple of days, right? I just think in so many different ways. You know, and there's the discussion of actually what happened and making that the story.
Yep.
And then there's the discussion of the discussion, which I think is where, you know, we want to be. And I know I want to be and you guys do. But I will tell you that, you know, I'm just reflecting on everything that happened. And I think one of the key points that I've arrived at is, and I understand why any GM, any coach, any organizational person would do this like we all would. I think Brandon Bean's sticking up for his guys, too. You know, for right or wrong. I mean, you know, you may say, well, he doesn't put the resources in, or they don't have the talent. If you want to believe that, that's fine and have that opinion. And that's how this started. But I think what part of what came out on Monday with you was, I think he's sticking up for his guys, which is, you know, he's not going to tell you, I don't value putting the resources in. He's not going to tell you, we don't spend the same kind of capital or resources as other teams, because that's kind of a way of saying that our guys aren't as good as the other guys.
Right.
And no way he's going to come on the radio and say that, right? So I think a lot of it was also just kind of sticking up for the guys that he has and giving them and letting everybody know that, like, we believe in these guys.
Yeah, that's probably right. Like, the answer to that could be perceived as like, wow, Bean says his own guys are low investment guys. And that's
100%.
I think, Sal, that's a great takeaway. The other thing about it that I think, you know, looking back on it, he has since basically laid out the case for, yes, they do, without saying that. And, you know, part of this conversation that, you know how this works, it gets so this side or that side. I might not agree with it, but I will tell you that if they think that they can low play it there to bolster other places, that can definitely be a way to win. That can definitely work. If they're going to build themselves an elite defense and an offense carried by Josh Allen, they did just have that offense. And, you know, I think one of the big questions going into this year will be, can they have a repeat performance from the offense? To which I'm inclined to think, yes, they can. I mean, Josh Allen's still the quarterback. The line is still going to be elite. A lot of the pieces are returning. It's a couple changes at receiver. And I think Josh Palmer can give them more than maybe Mac Hollins did, and maybe more than Amari Cooper did. So I don't think it's insane to think they could do it again. So, you know, it kind of gets painted, and the Bills sometimes like to do this, like lots of teams do. No one believes in us, and, you know, people were saying this or that when, you know, the pressure is going to be right back on them to kind of be one of the top offenses in the league.
Yeah, and if you think about the teams that do, I guess what you would say is invest more and have more talent, if you want to look at it that way, you know, it doesn't always go great. The Bengals are the first team to come to mind, right? And I think that, you know, to Brandon Bean's point here, which I would agree with this, which is, like, if you really want to help Josh Allen, first of all, keep him healthy and keep him clean. Guy has the longest starting streak, knock on wood, of any, you know, NFL quarterback right now. And he's healthy and he's clean. And he was sacked the least amount of times in the league last year. You want to protect him? You want to, I mean, help him? A, that's one way that people don't talk about because it's not sexy, put up numbers, but that's number one, the way you do it. You keep him healthy. You keep him upright. You keep him clean. You let him be him. And the Bills have done a great job of that. I mean, you guys know I've hammered the point home many, many times this offseason. They have not only a really good offensive line, but every single one of them is returning, which is amazing. And I think that that's really where they've kind of made a huge, not just investment, but development, because really they haven't had huge investment, though Cyrus Torrence has been one. They haven't gone out and signed these monster free agent contracts in the O-line. They've extended their own guys, you know, Deion and Spencer Brown, but they haven't done that. What they've done is developed a really good offensive line with a really good offensive line coach. Number two, you want to help Josh Allen? Okay, give him a guy that, you know, people have to really respect in the run game. We have, you know, 16 rushing touchdowns from James Cook, and no, he's not putting up Saquon Barkley numbers, but he's really good. So I think from that standpoint, then I look at the Bengals. What have the Bengals not done? They have not protected Joe Burrow, and he's been hurt, and they didn't make the playoffs last year. And again, I think this is, again, I'm telling you from how the Bills look at it and look around the league, if you want to do it that way, I understand that, which is, hey, do you want that? Do you want us to say, like, okay, well, I don't know if our quarterback's going to be healthy for 17 games, and he has these amazing receivers to throw to, and you're going to get in a shootout once in a while. There's no doubt about that with us. But at the same time, like, they had to fire Lou Amarulo and Arumo because they did not have a good enough defense last year either.
Yeah, it's the Bengals I've seen cited a lot, Sal, for that point. And it almost feels like depending on, you know, if you are on the extreme ends of either side of, you know, whether you think they should do more receiver, whether you think they should just punt on it the way, you know, or not even punt on it, just keep it the way it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the Bengals cited, and then I also see the Eagles cited too, because there is the Bengals model, which is, it's all about financial stuff, right? When it breaks down to this, because those are two teams that have both invested in it, and you could be the Bengals. You could be a team that has holes all over the place if you go that way. And then the Eagles are just sitting over here, and I don't know whether to use them as like a copycat blueprint.
Joe.
You know what I mean?
Me too.
When Bean says the other day that you can't have Pro Bowlers at every position, 99% of the time he is right. But I do have this one other team that does have that. But you know what I mean? Like, would you even use them as a blueprint because they kind of do things with contracts that nobody else in the league does?
And they're kind of a unicorn, right? I mean, it's great. You'd love that. And they've done a great job of it. There's no doubt. But they are kind of a unicorn like that, where they just have built this really great roster. And we were going in through the media room the other day about this, actually. Same point, Joe, which is, you look at their drafts, they've been good. They've also kind of really gotten a little bit of luck. Like, Jalen Carter falls because of the off-field stuff, and they wind up getting him where they get him, right? And they get Davis, I think, later in the round, right? It's just, they've done a nice job. They've had some talent fall to them, and they've brought those guys in. But I think of other teams like the Miami Dolphins and what they've done at wide receiver. They trade for Tyreek Hill, and they draft Jalen Waddle very early. They can't keep Tua healthy. And granted, you know, he has his own issues, but they aren't a really great, they're an average football team is really what they are. The year now that the Chiefs have definitely invested some because recently they've done that, but the year after they traded Tyreek Hill, they kind of really didn't do that at all, and they won the Super Bowl. So I do think that, like, there is something to be said for the approach of, hey, like, as long as we're really good here and protecting our quarterback, who's great, and we're trying to invest over here, which is maybe on the defensive line or whatever, and this is what they're trying to do this year, you know, I think that you don't have to have the other thing that, you know, we're talking about here. And I just think there's so many different ways you can definitely look at this and break it down. And, you know, the Bills this year, you know, you guys say, Jeremy say, can it sustain? One thing Joe brought up, I think, with Shelton Bulldog when he was doing the, Joe, you were doing the AFC reverse power rankings. I heard this, but I also know you guys have talked about this. One area where I don't know if it's sustainable as well is how many turnovers the Bills got last year. And that helped everybody, right? That helped the defense kind of bail them out, and it also helped the offense score points last year. So I think the Bills also look and go, wait a minute, how sustainable is it that we got so many turnovers? We're going to have to be better where we can't rely on that. Steve Tasker says this all the time, and he's right. That is great. It's not a plan. You can't go into a game planning and go, we're going to get three turnovers today. Yeah, you hope to do that, but you can't have that as your plan of winning a game. And you got to be able to stop teams better than that next year.
803-0550. Get some calls in with Sal as well. Yeah, the turnover point is good. I mean, one of the things I like to say all the time is I don't need the Bills to turn the ball over. Force punts, that'll work too. You know, force punts.
Yep.
And that'll get the ball back for Josh Allen. Brian in Arcade is up with Sal. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Hey, guys. So Bean's comments and then, like, the totality of the offseason and kind of, like, the outlook. I mean, I think if you had to bulletize what the GM has been about in both your interview and like the end of the season press conference, it's that the Bills are banging on the door. They don't have to make major changes, and they're not just losing to anybody. They're losing to the historic Kansas City Chiefs, which rolls to the free agency and the draft. Nothing really changes. We invest in the defense. Most of the money goes to the defensive side. We hold Pat in general on wide receiver outside of Josh Palmer, which really leaves me thinking like, okay, then I've got to trust McDermott's defense with these new and better players. And the reason why I say that is, you know, Elijah Moore's in yesterday, but the Bills are down to $4 million of cap space, and we've kind of seen his defense with better players in it, or at least players in his prime. I'm talking about prime Trey White, prime Hyde and Poyer. You had Tremaine Edmonds in the middle. You had a younger Ed Oliver, and so forth. You've had that defense. And so now I'm just supposed to believe that Deion Walker and the top four picks, and they come in, and that defense is going to be better than it was last year to hold up. But the problem for me is, like, you've seen the waves now. Like, Trey White has been hurt here, and now he's back again. Dane Jackson's now back here again. Jordan Phillips had to be brought back in. Quentin Jefferson, Micah Hyde is a player coach last year. And so, for me, I think time frame starts to become a problem because we've kind of seen waves of this kind of approach. Can it be good? Yes. But this is also going to be the fourth season after 13 seconds. So when the GM's kind of, you know, proud of his resume, sure, you can be proud of it. But you are now in a situation where you have utilized all of Allen's 20s. And with the same coach, same approach, same kind of lean approach on wide receiver, in my opinion. So now I just have to have faith that McDermott's defense is going to be dominant, more dominant in the playoffs, because I think he'll be fine in the regular season. I don't dispute that. I think we'll be a nice competitive defense, 17 to 21 points a game. It's just really that long run, and you're kind of getting into a window now. I would say this is my final point, where you're hoping to win one. I certainly don't know that you're going to go into dynasty mode with a 30-some-year-old Josh Allen in this coach, because we've seen it. That's my point. We've seen this defense, this team, this approach over 8 years now. You know, this is his eighth year. McDermott's been here nine. At what point is the end of these players, TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson, do they make you explosive? No, I think they're solid players. But, you know, players have come and gone, and now you're bringing them back again, and now you don't have money to sign a receiver. So if the approach isn't going to change, then I think you're kind of topped out. I think you've been topped out for a while.
Well, Brian, I'll kind of answer this a little bit. Every single year, aren't Bills fans just betting on Josh Allen? I mean, I am. I'm betting on Josh Allen to be in one of these years, whether it's the supporting cast or it's, you know, we can talk about it, how you're not one player away. Sometimes you're one play away. Sometimes you're a yard away from where you want to be. I don't know what they would have done against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. They have matched up better than the Chiefs, quite possibly. But, you know, I guess it comes down to whether or not you're someone that buys stuff like this group can't win the big one versus they haven't and they probably could have and or should have. I don't know. You paint a pretty dark picture that I don't think many Bills fans really agree with.
Well, and on the defense, and to throw this to Sal on this, if they, you know, their bet is on making the defensive personnel better, and the assumption that it won't look better in the playoffs, I mean, that is a lot to assume, because Sal, like, I don't think anybody has a confusion about what they're doing. These last two losses to the Chiefs in the playoffs, where everyone's felt like the Chiefs' offense was gettable, I don't even think the Bills would tell you they were perfectly happy with their personnel. Different reasons, right?
You
had all your linebacker injuries 2 years ago, and then this past year, Benford goes out, and you probably didn't think you were as talented on that side of the ball as you could have been. So their bet is that they're going to be more talented on that side of the ball and that they'll be able to hold a team like that down more.
Correct. So I think there's a lot in there in that phone call. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure what the overall point was, to be honest with you. I was kind of confused on everything he was saying, like, other than I think he was just saying I don't trust Sean McDermott's defense.
That's what I
think. That's really what the point was.
Right? No matter what they do, they're not going to stop Kansas City or whoever in the playoffs.
A long way to say that. First of all, let me correct something. Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have both been here the same number of years. This is their eighth year, right? Because they were hired in 2017. Brandon Bean came in after the draft, but their first year together was 2017. Okay, that's number one, just to correct that. Number two, bringing players back in these waves. I mean, well, yeah. So the approach isn't, the approach actually is different this year, because the point is, Brian, that what Joe just said is absolutely right. What they've tried to do this offseason to put themselves in a position where that doesn't have to happen again, right? When you guys agree, like, you don't have to go out and say, oh my God, we got to bring in Jordan Phillips. You don't have to say, oh my God. Now, you might have brought back Trey White and Dane Jackson because you could supplant, you could give a different name for those guys. They were going to they wanted to sign a couple of veteran corners to not be in a position they were in the AFC Championship game last year, which was relying on Kyrie Elam to have to come into the game in a critical situation and play most of the game. So I think that approach has been different. As far as the window, of course, we all know that, right? That they, yeah, that you're hoping to win one. You're always hoping to win one. I mean, what? Dynasty talk. Sure. I mean, everybody would love that. Every team wants to win one. Even when Josh Allen came in the league, you're like, let's just get a Super Bowl. That'd be great. And then after that, let's see where it goes. But no doubt they've operated this year as the next 5 years are where you're trying to win. I mean, look at what they've done. They've signed all these guys to four-year extensions. They signed Josh to a six-year extension. And really, it all matches up. They got 5 years left with Josh Allen in his prime, basically, to try and win one. And that's what the goal definitely is. We are 4 years from 13 seconds. I'll remind Brian that they did advance farther last year than they did during 13 seconds, right? I mean, so you're right there still, and it's still a very good team with a very good chance to win an AFC Championship game and go to the Super Bowl. And I'll say exactly what Bulldog said yesterday, because I agree. I just never agree with the sentiment of you can't win with Sean McDermott, or you can't win with Brandon Bean. There's nobody... there's no rule that says that. It hasn't happened yet. I'll give you that. I understand that. And there are reasons for that. There's certainly, you know, legitimate things to talk about. But you're still right there and having an opportunity to do that. But the reason they did all the things they did on the defense this season is exactly, Brian, to me, to not have the approach that you just talked about, which has held them back sometimes.
Sal, as you've talked this week with people around the country, and whether that's radio people, newspaper, people that covers these teams and these draft picks, what have you learned a little bit more about their class and about what they're bringing in, this mostly defensive-heavy draft?
I would say that people have the same question. Oh, well, are they asking Josh Allen to do too much, right? Because that's been something of a thought over the last several years anyway. And it's an interesting argument that kind of gets even more heightened because of what happened Monday, right? That's been kind of like since the last 48 hours because of that, because what happened on Monday, I think people are still asking that question. That said, I think most people I've talked to, most people I've read, they're really happy with what the Bills did on defense, or think at least they got good players that could really help the defense and say, okay. And look, I think nationally, now I know right here locally, it doesn't work out like this as much because of the results of some of the ends of the season. Nationally, and other reporters and people I talk to around the league have an amazing amount of respect for Sean McDermott as a defensive coach. Like, it's so funny. You step out of Buffalo, you go around and you talk to, you know, people around the country, you're going to get a much different feel than you do even locally about Sean McDermott, because what happens is here in Buffalo, they've not had these great, as good of defensive performances. They've lost in the playoffs. But people in other markets and national people are like, oh, yeah, well, you know, Sean McDermott's going to coach these guys up. He's a really good defensive mind. He needed some guys. They aged out a little bit. They needed to get back to having some more guys there for him. And I think that's been a pretty big takeaway. The questions have been, are they asking Josh Allen to do too much still? That's number one. But he did win the league MVP, so you're like, that gets to that. It's just a question that gets asked because it always has been. And then number two is, oh, my God, they really got some nice players on defense, and Sean McDermott's going to coach these guys, and they're going to be better there.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Wester Hotline as we chat about the Bills draft. And, you know, it's kind of the season as we don't finish out the offseason, but maybe Elijah Moore comes in. Sal, would you expect Elijah Moore to happen?
I was just going to ask you, Sal, because we haven't talked to you since Monday. And also, do you know about this weird free agent tender that he has?
Like, I do.
I think he's free to sign with every team, right?
I don't think we've ever talked about this tender, because now it's been used twice. Yeah. There's another player that it got used on as well in this offseason.
But it had been years since.
Wait, wasn't I on with you guys yesterday? I was on with you guys yesterday.
No,
Joe,
I don't think so. You weren't. Just Monday.
I wasn't on yesterday morning with you guys?
No, you weren't. Man. It all blends together.
Okay, all right. It does. You're right. You know what? I came in and saw you. That's what it was. I saw you yesterday.
You talked to us. Maybe an extendo.
This, okay, good.
I'm glad.
Free agent tender tag that hadn't been used in 2022. We've seen used twice this offseason.
Okay, let me explain. I'm glad you asked me this, because I do think it's important to tell people. Because, Joe, I think this answers your question and Jeremy about, do I think the Bills will do it? I think it's harder. It's harder now because here's why. So the way this works is, and it's a very rare kind of rule, that it's a rule that's kind of rarely used, but it happens here, as we know. So there's this thing called an unrestricted free agent tender. The Browns have put that on Elijah Moore. What this means now is, if Elijah Moore does not sign with another team by July 22nd, that's the key date, July 22nd. If he doesn't sign with another team by then, he can only play for the Cleveland Browns. And he will play for $3.4 million. They've guaranteed that. It's no different than a RFA tender when you guarantee that salary, but hey, now you go out to free negotiate, right? You could do that. Happens in hockey, happens in football. If no one signs him by July 22nd, he goes back to the Cleveland Browns. He plays for $3.4 million. In the meantime, he is allowed to negotiate contracts with anybody. It is a two-way street. There is no minimum that another team has to offer him. But you would think, wouldn't you think, you'd probably have to at least 3.4. Come very close to that, if not right. Because if you're Elijah Moore and somebody offers you $2 million, why would you take that over $3.4 million, right? So you're probably going to have to offer that. And if it could be close. Maybe it's close and he goes, hey, I'd rather go to this other organization. That's fine. That could happen. Now, if that happens, the reason they put this tender on him is, if that were to happen by the tender deadline, May 1st, I believe that is, what is that, tomorrow, right? May 1st?
Yeah.
If he were to sign before then, he still falls under the compensatory pick formula for the Browns as a player that left to weigh in for next year and for the team that added him for the player for an ad for next year, if that makes sense, right?
Okay.
If it's after May 1st, he does not count against that formula.
Okay.
But he's still in that situation where by July 22nd, he can still negotiate, but he reverts back to them essentially for $3.4 million if he doesn't sign with anybody.
One follow-up to this. When that number, 3.4, is that salary guaranteed? Can it be worked where he signs for two with incentives to go up to six? Like, how do they lock in that 3.4?
So it's like an RFA tender. An RFA, it's guaranteed 3.4.
Okay.
But he still, once July 22nd comes, at any point really, he can negotiate with the Browns a different contract, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So he can still sign for $6 million with the Browns. He can sign for $6 million with the Bills or anybody else. That's just the minimum that he's guaranteed to play on this year with the Cleveland Browns. But Browns so, can't yeah. say, all right, well, we're getting you back after July 22nd, and guess what? Ha ha, we're giving you $2 million. So they can't do that.
So the most likely scenario, let's say the Bills do want to add him. That happens after May 1st, and it's going to be at least $3.4 million.
Well, you think? Because the first thing I thought of as Sal is describing there how the rule goes is, I wonder if he's visiting here because he's deciding whether he wants to take less to come here. And he wants to know more about the building, and he wants to, you know what I mean? Like, hey, if I go to the Bills, I might only be getting two, but is that worth it? Because I'll be playing with Allen, opportunities,
but I think
versus
he,
playing
he,
for three with Cleveland.
But I think he said it's like a tender. It's 3.4
yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah, but Sal, didn't you say
but let's remember, Joe, the timeline. He came to Buffalo before they put the tender on him.
Okay.
Right, okay. Oh, so
does that make sense, what I'm saying?
He didn't know that.
Right, right. He came to Buffalo, and then the Browns go, oh, by the way, hey, if he's going to start making visits, let's put that tender on him.
Okay.
Right? As far as I know, I don't think he was aware, because it wasn't public at least, that that was going to happen. Now, there is one other little piece of this that I think is very important. Remember, guys, only the top 51 salary cap hits count in the offseason, okay? If Elijah Moore were to sign with the Bills, let's say 3.5, they're like, hey, we want to make sure we get you, so we're going to give you that money. So let's just round it up. Right now, the 51st salary on the Bills is $1 million. If they were to sign him for 3.5, that million drops below 51. It really, for now, would only count 2.5 on the salary cap.
Which they do have room for, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the other thing about that, Sal, just again, like the contracts, we did this with Trey White, like how much is guaranteed, how much is incentive. Mm-hmm. So that would be 3.5 or 3.4 guaranteed for him and like 2.4 on the cap. That's the kind of salary that, to me, like, you're on the team. So the conversation becomes, and this kind of gets to Bean's point, we didn't see anybody in the draft that was going to get into our top four. Elijah Moore might have a shot in the top four, or at least would be a comfortable number five. So do they want to make that commitment now? The thing about not drafting a receiver and the UDFAs is there's not really much of a roadblock for him if he were to be signed. So I guess final question, we're late here, but like, what do you think is the most likely scenario? How do you think this ultimately does play out?
Most likely to me is, because of that number, you know, maybe it might be tough for the Bills to do that. I think one likely one thing that I would not close the door to is that he would sign for the Bills for less guaranteed but more in incentives. Hey, bet on yourself. You know, you want to come here. We can't give you that guarantee, but I guess what? You make this team, you bet on yourself, you're going to make a lot more than that, right? That's a Trey White deal. That's a Trey White deal right there, what you just brought up.
Okay.
So more likely scenario for me is we wait until after May 1st, and it seems like it's probably more earmarked to go back to the Browns. But then again, I think the Browns did it just because they might just want to reassure themselves on the comp pick formula.
Right.
And maybe they just don't want him anyway.
And right, they did just sign Deontay Johnson yesterday.
Right.
So. That's right.
That's exactly right. That's right. Yeah.
And for more, his numbers last year, 61 catches, 538 yards, one touchdown. So if you want to put incentives that are not likely to be earned, that would keep that cap number low. Like you could say two touchdowns is $2 million. And that would be
exactly right.
Like, that's it.
Now you got it. Yeah.
All it has to be is a bigger number than you put up last year, and you're going to hit those incentives. So that's 61 catches, 538. I'm not sure exactly all the numbers, the games started, snaps, all that. All right. Thanks, Sal. We got in the weeds there, but it's good to know because, I mean, there's obviously interest in Elijah Moore. They talked to him before the draft, said, put a pin in it. Let's wait till after the draft because the Bills would, of course, be looking at receiver options. And here we are where Moore is still in the mix. Okay. Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys. Yep. You got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio. He's on the way coming up, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Jeremy and Joe, we're late. We'll get to a break. When we get back, I want to find out if you agree you can find 10 wins for the Patriots this year.